This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Muthan, and you're about to embark on the complete Kelly and Company podcast experience.
It's Full Octane, Kelly and Ramya with all the fixins.
Live from the Accessible Media Studios, this is Kelly and Company. Entertainment, lifestyle, and great conversation. It's AMI Audio's on-air community, and everyone's invited. And now, the big man himself, Kelly McDonald.
So tomorrow I have one of these HR things here at work. So I'm busy in the morning. So it's today one of those days where I feel like I'm typing, getting ready, right up until the show starts, and even up until when Bob introduces. Like, it's
really,
yeah, just because I want to
make
sure.
It's not like you at all.
Yeah, I know it's not. And I've already forgotten things like that. You know, I'm going to go do the audio vanity card. And between, you know, that being in my head and my hands touching the keyboard, whoo, it flies out of there. So backtrack is up. Now, you did this this HR thing. Did you have to really compress your Monday to make sure you accounted for the time that you were away doing it?
Not really. Like, this week didn't feel, it feels heavy with meetings and things like that. And like you said, blocks of time being taken, but it doesn't feel like there's a lot of crunch projects happening at the same time. Those are the weeks when you feel like, like you're almost getting ready for a vacation.
You, I kind of chuckle because you have all those meetings and I sit back and think, oh my goodness. Man, Rum's got all those meetings. I'm glad. Well, you just said, you know, with meetings and stuff, right? I don't have meetings and stuff.
And I you want to get invited to meetings,
no,
Kelly? Is that what this is?
I love the you and Jeff buffer, right? And then Matt has his tech stuff that he's got to do and meet with those guys. Yeah. I just love that. No, we don't need Kelly for this. You know,
Kelly wants more meetings, everyone.
No, I think they all know. They've endured that before with too many meetings with Kelly. Do we have to? I think they love that they have you guys to rope them in. Jeff, Rum, why don't you sit on this
Kelly's
panel?
Looking for more meetings. More work Kelly's way. Don't worry, Kels.
I love,
you did the right thing by saying this on air.
Folks, I think their new names is not producer. They're Kelly and Company buffers. I think that's really what goes on here. And I think that's awesome.
Nice.
coming up with Kelly and Company and the buffer team, we've got all sorts of meetings ahead. On today's show, Greg David is doing spring cleaning with us. He's going to be bringing us up to date on things going on in the television world, including season finales, spinoffs, and brand new shows coming our way.
We're going to learn about a new person with Ryan Delahunty. He's paying tribute to Cleon Smith, who recently passed away at 78 years of age. And he had a lifelong relationship, Kels, with the Halifax School for the Blind. So we want to learn more about him.
Well, we've known the show has done really well. And when you hear from people who've had that kind of relationship, it's always wonderful what they've done and their stories. Always love it. Mary Mammoliti of Kitchen Confession dishes out different kitchen secrets to make you rethink how you cook. We'll talk to her during hour two of Kelly and Company. Okay, meeting buffer. As New York State forges ahead with its new Excelsior Pass, other U.S. states are debating the merits of vaccination passports.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott received his COVID shot on live TV to promote vaccination among his constituents, but he's always stressed that getting the shot is purely voluntary. As for vaccine passports,
government should not require any Texan to show proof of vaccination and reveal private health information just to go about their daily lives.
Abbott's executive order prohibiting passports does not apply to the tens of thousands of private businesses in Texas that still might require proof of vaccination for employees and customers. Jim Ryan, ABC News, Dallas.
Now, you expect these kinds of conversations from the state that had 41,000 in the Major League Baseball stadium the other day at Globe Life Park there for the Blue Jays Rangers game. So I expect to hear this stuff, but let's look at us. Let's look at the world in general, Rum. What's your thoughts on a passport? Should you have to show at any time proof of vaccination when that time comes?
I think so.
Yeah.
And not because I personally feel that that's the way to go. I just think that that's what it's going to come down to, Kels. Some kind of proof of vaccination, some kind of, we're already, like, I'm trying to look back to familiar things that we already know where this kind of stuff is necessary. You know, if you work in a certain sector or you work in a specific kind of facility, you are required to have proof of vaccination for other things, right? Mm-hmm. Like flu
shot. Well, you show ID anyway.
For yeah, so many you
things,
do.
Right? And
you do.
This is one of those areas that's difficult because, let's face it, people are going to get vaccinated, walk into Walmart, and when someone says, oh, whoa, you can't come in here without a mask. I've been vaccinated. Yeah, but I don't know that. I've been vaccinated. Yeah. Now get out
but
of my way.
But do you think it'll be like that for everything? Like grocery shopping,
really? I think it's
going to
be like that for a time until we all get vaccinated. So
I'm not
against this for a short time. Do I hope that when, especially something like getting on an airplane. You know, you still
have to, whatever
the other country says you have to do, you kind of got to follow. But for getting on an airplane, if you're going to be flying or getting on a Greyhound, sitting next to someone, there's got to be something that puts people's mind at ease and doesn't just let you be reckless. You know, like they're not going to let you get on if you're drunk onto the Greyhound bus. They don't want trouble.
Uh-huh.
So why would you want trouble with, an unvaccinated person? Unfortunately, now, or at least knowing, hey, you've got to have your mask on, you've got to sit. I think we still just need to use the precautions regardless.
Well, yeah, because even between borders, like city borders and town borders and things like that, we've talked and talked and talked about specifically people in Toronto, like because I live here and I know, going off to other parts of the province and really getting people riled up over there. Like, why are you coming into our towns where we have zeros and single digits of people being people having the virus, and then you're coming in from over there and our numbers are crazy.
Yep.
So that kind of stuff is legitimate, right? You don't want to be going over to other countries where the numbers aren't the same, the situations for vaccinations are not the same, and you can't just travel around like it's all the same.
No, you can't. And that's the stuff that's, I know, on our minds and what our focus is right now, whether it's Zoom fatigue, all sorts of things going on. But, you know, we always worry about what the other person does or doesn't do or can't get away with and who's infringing on our rights. Oh, speaking of that, in Washington State, a lawmaker is apologizing for attending a committee meeting from behind the wheel.
Because of the pandemic, the state legislature has been conducting most of its business remotely. And Tuesday morning was a meeting of the Transportation Committee. Like the rest of her colleagues, Senator Rebecca Saldana appeared by Zoom and with a fake background. But it was pretty obvious she was driving, and at one point, she even admitted it.
You know, I'm driving my old vehicle right now.
That's a violation of the state's distracted driving law. Senator Saldana has since apologized, saying she needs to become a better driver. Jeff Pogula, ABC News, Seattle.
It kills me because people think, all right, we got to watch those kids that are doing the online learning because those kids are supposed to be in class. And if they just put up the little avatar for themselves, where the heck are they? What are they doing? Are they like sleeping or something?
Yeah.
And here you have this person doing what we've all been. Don't talk on the phone and drive, Rum.
Not even audio only. Like, you're going to put on a fake background and everything with the video feed on? That's scary.
Yes, where I am, guys. You're distracted. Mm-mm. You're an example. What next thing you'll be doing is going to the airport and flying off to another country. Oh, that's here in Canada. We have the politicians that, now stay home here. Don't go anywhere. Isolate at home. I'll be back. I'm off to Europe. Anyway, I thought that might start us off with a bit of a smile, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to take a break, and in just a moment, since it's Wednesday, it's Jeff Ryman, our producer, another meeting buffer for me. He's in with Health Headlines. We'll be right back. Reach out to the program. It's easy, folks. Feedback at AMI.ca. If you want to send an email to the network and ask a question, maybe about AMI Tele, AMI TV, or AMI Audio. And, of course, you also can look for us on Twitter, at AMI Audio. Another great way is phone it in. because we love to hear from you. Love to maybe play your message on air. 1-866-509-4545. 1-866-509-4545. Great thing to do, ladies and gentlemen. If you would, mention to us that, hey, it's okay to use your message on air, and we can do that. And we don't have to, and we won't, unless you give us permission. Please also say it's for Kelly and company. Rami Muth and Kelly McDonald, hosts of the program. Yeah, you know, with the Zoom meetings, Rum, not that I go to much of this stuff because I have my buffers, but the fact is you best find the most uncomfortable place to sit, too, so you don't doze off. I mean, I've dozed off person in meetings, right? And everybody just, he's not talking as much. Good, leave him alone. Should I wake him up? Just leave him alone. No, not in the meetings.
Oh, man.
Well, I'm asleep, so I don't notice.
Too
of course,
good.
Of course, I'm going to tell you no. I don't hear myself snoring. True.
I got to get some alibis for that. But did I tell you about the Monday morning Ryerson courses that I had where it was in the AMC theater building Monday morning at 8 a.m.? That would just be a 3-hour nap for me.
Oh, and what a comfortable place down there at
the
at Dundas.
Best.
Oh, that would be amazing. Yeah, I've done a few of those little, and I try, but I once in a while just nod my head and, when I used to tape classes, it was great because I'd wake myself up and go back and find where I fell asleep. And, you know, I'd hear what the teacher was saying and hear myself. Say something in my sleep. Anyway, so here's someone who isn't saying stuff in his sleep, but he brings a lot of health stuff, and sometimes we even talk about sleep. Jeff Ryman here with our health headlines.
I'm Jeff Ryman with the Health Report. I bring you the latest studies, advice, and health headlines from major newspapers, magazines, and the Canadian press.
Jeff is our co-meeting buffer for me here on the program. Serge, you used to doze off in school?
No, you know what? Never. I was never that person who had their head down or just decided to doze off.
Why? Is that because it was sports
you
media?
You decide.
No, I mean, even in high school, college, I feel like I've always been pretty healthy in that sense where I get a solid night's sleep. Like, I try for 8 hours, and I will say probably 90% of the time I get 8 hours, if not more. So I feel like once I'm up, I'm fully rested and I have no need to fall asleep or potentially doze off in the middle of class. But, you know, my thing was I would zone out. I have a fairly short attention span when I'm trying to listen to somebody talk at the front of the class. I'm very much a visual and hands-on learner. So once I'm actually doing something, that's when I'm learning the most. But if there was a teacher talking in front of, you know, a class for an hour or two, I'd, you know, listen. I wouldn't fall asleep. But, you know, I caught myself looking outside the window quite a bit.
Tuning out like an old radio.
Yeah.
What happened to Jeff? Rum, maybe it's a sight thing. Because maybe he worried about people seeing his head as he bobs for apples. As his head goes, boom, boom, boom. Or you and I just, I don't notice anything.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the same way you used to hide your earphones under your hoodies or whatever, so you're listening to music through other classes.
Nobody knows they're here. Mr. Rhymes, where are we starting?
Yeah, we're going to talk about COVID, of course. I know we're probably getting sick and tired of it, but there's always new developments, and some of them can be really concerning. Of course, I think the new concern is this new variant that we're seeing across the country, primarily out on the west side of Canada, BC and Alberta primarily. And, you know, if everything goes how other variants have gone, it looks like this could very well spread to the rest of Canada very quickly and very shortly. So very much a cause for concern. So I dug up on the Canadian press. They had a little questionnaire about this P1 variant, which comes from and has been identified in Brazil. So, you know, there's a couple of who, what, where, when, why, how type of questions. So I'll just read it and go over some of the major facts and then we can discuss after. So what is it and how does it differ from other variants of concern? So the U.S.-based Center for Disease Control and Prevention, also known as the CDC, says the P1 variant has 17 unique mutations, including 3 on the part of the spike protein that binds to cells when we become infected. Those mutations on what's called the spike proteins are causing the most concern, says one doctor, Eileen Schwartz. And Schwartz, who's a researcher at the University of Alberta, says the mutation allows the virus to bind more efficiently to cells when it enters the body and may also interfere with the ability of antibodies producing the prior infection of from vaccines to recognize the variant form. So basically what this means is that you can still very much get COVID-19 or at least this P1 variant, even if you have tested positive for COVID-19 before. So another question is, how much more transmissible is it? And experts say the variants first detected in the UK and South Africa are roughly 50% more transmissible than the earlier form of the virus, which is known as the wild type. But they still aren't sure how contagious P1 compares to the others. Right now, the data on P1 is still very new. And one doctor, Dr. Sundaram, says what's more concerning is the data that is the variant could reinfect those who have already had COVID-19. A study from Brazil's Amazon region found the P1 variant was identified in 42% of cases sequenced there from late December. And even though approximately 75% of the region's population had previously been infected. So again, people who have had it down in Brazil caught this new P1 variant. So that's obviously a major cause for concern. Where is the variant circulating in Canada? Like I mentioned, there has been clusters that have appeared out west in BC and Alberta. Alberta's chief medical health officer, Dr. Dina Hinshaw, said that an outbreak involving P1 cases in the province appeared to be linked to a large employer with multiple sites across Western Canada. And Hinshaw said 3 of the 26 cases linked to those sites are confirmed to be that P1 variant. Amongst other outbreaks, the NHL's Vancouver Canucks has also reportedly been involved with this P1 variant, though the team and league have not confirmed that. And as of yesterday afternoon, 18 of the Canucks' 22 players were currently on the NHL's COVID-19 protocol list. That doesn't necessarily mean that all the players have tested positive. It just means that they could be close encounters or have been deemed close contacts to those who have tested positive for COVID-19. Another real interesting question, does the variant cause more severe disease? Schwartz says it's likely the P1 may result in more serious disease and that younger people could be more susceptible to a severe outcome with the variant compared to the wild type of the virus that has Canada has been most dealing with. He adds, however, the data on P1 is quite preliminary compared to B117, or also known as the UK variant. So still very early on in this process. And of course, I think the biggest question surrounding all of this, what implications does this variant have for the vaccines? And research suggests the mRNA vaccines from Pfizer and Moderna lose some effectiveness against that P1 variant, though that's not to say they won't work at all. But
kind of like a race, right?
Like, it is.
What's winning the vaccine or these variants? Because it feels like every time we step forward with the vaccines or a new product has come out or more age groups are now being vaccinated, it's also the, there's another variant or this variant has spread or these numbers are getting crazy because of these variants. So it always feels like we're racing.
Yeah, it does. And it's kind of scary. I mean, variants, I think, have popped up. I think even in the summer, we were talking about certain variants of and mutations of the coronavirus. And now we're seeing it yet again. And this P1 variant sounds pretty scary. And if it can evade or even have a lesser or I guess a higher chance of evading those vaccines, it's pretty scary. But like I said, there's still, and I've been saying this for probably the past year now, there's so much research that still needs to be done. We don't have conclusive evidence really about a whole lot at this point. But as of, you know, some preliminary studies, it looks like this P1 variant is one of the more dominant mutations of the coronavirus. And I think it definitely is a cause for concern.
Yeah, when I see numbers of young people who go out, do their things, have been able over the last year to not be as affected as drastically, other than losing family members and, of course, transmitting it, but seeing them ending up in hospitals, your heart goes out to all the people that we know are so affected and what we expected this thing to be. Because, quite frankly, you know, when we didn't know, it's almost like you just didn't know. Now that we know more, now that we're able to chart more, see more, I feel more anxiety in the last couple of weeks, almost than at any point in the last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true, because especially for the numbers and the way that they're heading, you know, when we keep looking and seeing, okay, there's effort, there's things that the government's doing, there's the rollout of the vaccines, but you're still seeing the numbers in Kells, like you're saying, with different parts of the population also. And it does spike a lot of anxiety, because you're thinking, what exactly is going to be the outcome? It feels like we're at an unknown again, but with that feel of, but it's been a year now, we know more. So it's almost scarier than it was a year ago.
Yeah,
I think it is a little bit, just because, again, these we have vaccines. It's almost like we've taken two or three steps forward and, you know, maybe one or two steps back. Like, we're still moving forward, just at a very, very slow pace. And what I mean by that is that, you know, this time last year, we had no idea when vaccines were going to be available, or even if that was going to be a thing. You know, over the summer, we got the news that, you know, there were some positive results that vaccines could work. So, you know, that was another step forward. We also took another step forward when we got a vaccine and stamped it for approval just before the new year. And then we started injecting some of these vaccines into people all across the world. So that was a huge step forward. But now they're telling us that this new variant could very well evade some of these vaccines. It's another cause for concern, and I think rightfully so for a lot of people. And if you're also saying, you know, it's scaring people, like we just said, that not only could this evade vaccines, but if it's slightly more contagious, we've already, like I mentioned in this report, that the UK variant and the South African variant were around 50% more contagious than the quote wild, the wild strand that was, I guess, the original one we saw come to North America in early of 2020. So definitely lots of cause for concern, but, you know, hopefully we get more answers to a bunch of these questions very, very soon.
As much as we were just speaking of that, just a note came in. Unfortunately, a 16-year-old has passed away in Montreal in the hospital from COVID-19. And very, very sad, as we were just discussing. Jeffy, thanks for the health update and sharing this with us, because it's something definitely we need to really consider, and especially on the verge of all the changes going on in the country. Take care, pal.
Of course. Stay safe, guys.
Jeff Ryman bringing us our health headlines today. We're going to take a break, and Greg David, he's here to talk TV in just a moment. This week on AMI at the Movies, we're taking off with Apollo 13, starring Tom Hanks, Kevin Bacon, and Bill Paxton. It follows the real-life events when an explosion on board threatens the astronauts' lives. Tune in to AMI at the Movies, hosted by Ramya and I, Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern on AMI TV. Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Kelly & Company. Ramya Muthan, my co-host. I'm Kelly McDonald. Thank you for being with us wherever you are listening in around the world. And every couple of weeks, we get a chance to talk a little TV with Greg David. He's our communications specialist here at AMI.
I'm Greg David, and I love television. Reality shows, dramas, sitcoms, and documentaries. I watch them all. I'm excited to share my passion for the television industry with you in front of and behind the cameras as it changes and evolves.
Mr. David, welcome back to the program as we await a little more lockdown adaptations in your area and ours. How are you doing?
Hi. Yeah, I'm doing okay. I mean, honestly, since the pandemic started, I really haven't spent that much time going outside. Now the weather's nice, though. I did last weekend. I went out for a walk and stayed socially distanced from people. But yeah, I mean, at this point, it's getting really frustrating. And I don't know about, you know, for you, Kelly, in London, about, you know, when it comes to the vaccines and things like that. But being 50, I'm a long way down the list before I get anything put into my arm.
Yep. Same here. I've been waiting. I've been checking, as I was saying in the last segment, very antsy and anxious. It almost feels worse than it has at any other time. Tell me something. When you're walking along like that and you have to social distance, but you're out, you're around other people and you kind of people watch, it almost like no one gets as mad as they used to. Before, when people would stare at them, I would imagine that now everybody's got to be a distance away anyway. And if you're separate, so you don't seem like such an interloper, I'm sure. Or do you still get the evil looks of, what are you looking at?
Yeah, no, I think what it is you become very conscious when other people are coming, and you kind of get a little bit nervous, like, okay, now we're going to go single file and we're going to go on the far side of the path so that they can go by on the far side of their side of the path. So it's just a little bit more thinking, and things that we used to take for granted, just kind of moving around, and now you have to double think, and it's even more, more stressful, I imagine, for you, Kelly, as a white cane user, and you've talked about this before, you know, having people get too close to you anyway. And now with the pandemic, it's even worse.
Oh, it's terrible that way. It's rethinking it totally, like caveman days of you know, we got to where people understood a little more about dealing with persons with a guide dog or a cane user. Now it's like, all right, let's tear that script up. Now here's the new one, but it's blank. Yeah. Rum at least can go out with the dog and scare everyone off.
Scare everyone off? No, it's more
like 2 meters. Yeah,
you know, the dog's trying to take me to everybody else. That's the problem.
And that's the one thing people are like, oh, he's a dog. Yeah, you know, COVID could still from a dog. We don't know yet. What? Oh, no, get away. Greg, you wanted to do a little spring cleaning, especially with the weather nice in today's segment, and bring us up to date with things going on in the television world. Let's start with a show that's been around for a really long time now, The Walking Dead. What's the latest on that one?
Yeah, so after 10 seasons on the air, the ninth season finale just was broadcast the other night on AMC. AMC has announced that it will return for its 10th season just aired. Season 11 is coming up. It will return on Sunday, August the 22nd, for a last bunch of episodes. And man, it was so long ago that we were introduced to Rick and Carl and Daryl and Maggie and Glenn, and not all of those people, the names that I just mentioned, have made it to this point. Some of them have, but AMC is going to debut 8 new episodes in August, and then they're going to follow that up with another 16 episodes to come in the future. Now, I watched the first 4 or 5 seasons of the show, but I'm in the minority because it has been the number one cable series for the last 12 years on the air. Pretty incredible for a show of The Walking Dead and on a cable network like AMC.
Yeah, it's a diehard show. I know that for sure with people. I mean, I wouldn't know what it's like to watch it myself. It's not available with audio description yet on Netflix. Just saying.
Yep.
But it is number one, and a lot of people will be so stoked, and if they don't know already, that it's going to continue for a little bit. And speaking of the dead, not really zombies, or at least characters that seemingly returned from the dead, a fan favorite returned to Law and Order SVU last Thursday, and he launched his own Law and Order show. So tell us about this.
Yeah, Christopher Maloney, who's a character Elliot Stabler, left the police force and his work partner Olivia 10 seasons ago, returned to the Big Apple last Thursday on Law and Order SVU, and it was a ratings winner for NBC just because I think because he was such an integral part of SVU, and I haven't watched that series in a long, long time, but I tuned in last Thursday because I wanted to see how they were going to reunite these characters and even more importantly, the spinoff. So he's now starring in his own Law and Order spinoff. It's called Law and Order Organized Crime, and last week's SVU return helped launch the new series at 10 p.m. So I watched the the crossover event because SVU was on at 9 and then Organized Crime at 10. And I really, really liked it. Now, Organized Crime is different from SVU in that they don't have an episode or a crime encapsulated within one episode like they do with the usual Law and Order episodes. This one's going to be an overarching theme of Elliot trying to take down these bad guys over the course of a season. So a little bit different. I really liked it, and I'm definitely going to be tuning in this Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern for episode 2.
That's really great when you can be pulled into something like that. And I've seen that in so many, we see that a lot in the streaming services, a theme right through 8, 10, 12 episodes. You know, whether it's something like I just finished watching The Mist, you know, something that came out a while ago, but it's that whole theme of something, whether there's going to be a season 2, 28 or whatever, that's, what's that go back to really, 24? Almost like that show, and the way that you follow something, a particular thing, and see those different things happen. And I kind of like that. Sometimes it gets a little old, especially if you're not liking something about it. It's chancy that way. But most people really get into it, and doing something like this pulled you in, Greg. So that's really awesome.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
April and May is when we hear usually about the season finales of television shows. Anything like that coming up soon that we should be aware of? Kim's Convenience, they're saying goodbye this month, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Kim's Convenience is ending with its fifth season finale on Tuesday, April the 13th. So next week on CBC. Now, actually, tonight on CBC are the season finales of Coroner, which is a great medical drama that you can catch up on CBC Gem if you've missed the first three seasons of that show. And a new show called Pretty Hard Cases. That season finale is tonight. It stars a couple of very funny ladies in as cops. One of the leads is from Baroness Von Sketch. It's very good and very different from your typical cop drama. So you can check those two shows out. And then as we look later on into May, we have the season finales of Magnum P.I. on Friday, May the 7th on CBS. The sitcom The Neighborhood on Monday, May the 17th on CBS. And CBS's SEAL Team on Wednesday, May the 19th. Because of the pandemic, the usual May sweeps have been thrown off. So not much is really ending this spring. As you guys know, when we've spoken in the past, you know, all of May is pretty much taken up by season finales. Well, because of the pandemic, production was shut down. So we don't have as much, clogging up May as we used to.
Okay. I'm thinking of some of these shows and whether they'll ever end. I mean, I don't know if any one of them will
I'm surprised Magnum did as well as it did returning. Like, it's a real credit to something you said, oh, for goodness sake, it's a totally, like, decades past and people have grabbed onto
wild,
it.
Pretty wild, right?
Yeah, and I hate it. I hate the new version of Magnum. I tuned in thinking, okay, it's an old show. I love the old one. Let's check it out. And I really didn't like it at all. It just didn't have the same tone and the same fun that the original did. It took itself a little bit too seriously for me, but that's just me.
I did the opposite, Greg, for that reason, though, thinking, oh, it's an old show. I'm not going to want to watch it. And I did not give it even a shot because every time I try that, I find, oh, it's not even close. I found that with Spencer for Hire, the one I found on Netflix, then, and I thought, hey, you know, it's not too bad, but certainly so far different than what I liked in the original show. And let's be fair, you know, a lot of it is your actors that you so used to. Magnum's not Magnum without Tom Selleck.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so you caught us up with season finales. How about new shows? Anything that we should be taking note on checking out?
Yeah,
Jamie Foxx.
Jamie Foxx has got a new show. So I'm pretty excited about this. He's returning to our screens in a Netflix series called Dad, Stop Embarrassing Me. So the series was inspired by Jamie Foxx's relationship with his daughter, Corinne, who she is also an executive producer on the show. And the storyline is that bachelor Brian Dixon unexpectedly becomes a full-time father to his teenage daughter, Sasha. And you can tune in. That'll be next Wednesday, April the 13th. All of the episodes are going to drop all at once on Netflix. So, yeah, I'm going to check that one out. I'm pretty excited about it. It's got a fair amount of buzz going into next week's debut.
Wow, you know what that reminds me of? Remember, you know, I can't think of if it was like a craze. I don't remember if it actually became a TV show, if it was a YouTube thing, or in its earliest days, somebody had something out. maybe it was even a podcast called Poop My Father Would Say.
And that's right.
Using a different word. And it sounds totally like that. And I always thought, oh, geez, if my dad was still alive, he would be great in this thing. So I really find that really crazy when you see something like that leap up and come out. So Jamie Foxx, so that's really going to be really special. So for you, Greg, what is the thing in this that you is it Jamie Foxx or just a subject?
Yeah, for me, it's going to be Jamie Foxx. I mean, he was so good in Ray, which has been broadcast on AMI and was a subject of AMI at the movies. Mm-hmm. I'm just really excited to see him back on TV and really interested in how the storyline of with his daughter, Corinne, how that kind of all works out. And then there's another show with a TV veteran, Katie Sagal, who's coming back. She was on Sons of Anarchy. She's back with a new show called Rebel, and it's inspired by the life of Aaron Brockovich. And Annie Rebel Bello is a blue-collar legal advocate without a law degree. She's a funny, messy, brilliant, and fearless woman who cares desperately about the causes she fights for and the people she loves. And guys, that one's going to debut Thursday, April the 7th. So, yeah, Thursday, April the 7th. So that's tomorrow. That'll be Thursday, April the 8th, because today's the 7th, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Yes. So tomorrow night on ABC.
That's great.
With May being so different, we've had the pandemic. We know lots of people are watching lots of stuff, but we know that they always used to, like, the sweeps time was so great for people to watch and get those finals in this era. How much of that's really changed, Greg, now, and will it return as things get better in the years? Will we, you know, see the same alignment we've seen for years when things get back to being the newer normal, but at least normal?
I think the pandemic is making everybody rethink the way that formula used to work with the traditional May sweeps, you know, all new episodes of shows in September and then off in the holidays. I think that the business is rethinking everything because the pandemic has forced them to. So I think that you're definitely going to see more formulas. I mean, we've already seen in the last year, the over-the-top streaming services like NBC has their own called Peacock. Discovery has their own called Discovery Plus. So even just in the last year, we've seen these changes to the streaming, and the conventional networks are actually saying, hey, did you miss this episode? Well, head on over to our app, head on over to our website where you can stream these episodes. So the pandemic's forced people to make some changes already. I would be hard pressed to say that we're going to go back to, quote unquote, the good old days of the traditional formula. I just don't think that it works anymore.
I feel like the pandemic just advanced what these guys were doing beforehand. I really do feel we were going to have the streaming services. Everyone was going to do what they were going to do. It just made everything race from 6 years maybe out we were out from to now. So very interesting.
Thanks, love the Greg. Varieties, though.
Oh, for sure. The variety is good.
Of everything that's out there for timing, for miniseries, for, you know, longer things. We're going back to streaming services using weekly, you know,
drops,
letting things out, drops. Exactly. So it's good. Yeah.
Thanks, Greg.
Good times. We're not going anywhere. Might as well watch TV.
Oh, no. Especially after midnight tonight. You're not going anywhere.
Thanks, guys.
Take it easy. Greg David, you can join him every other Wednesday to talk all things television right here on Kelly and Company. We're going to step aside for a moment. Ryan Delahanty pays tribute to Cleon Smith. We're going to get that conversation with him. Cleon unfortunately passed away recently, and he had a lifelong relationship with the Halifax School for the Blind. Ryan steps in next. Well, let's be fair, folks. The past year has been a struggle. We have both felt direct and indirect impacts of the pandemic, and the COVID fatigue is real. That's why our team of contributors are digging up ways to improve mental health and resiliency to the pandemic's ever-growing changes. Stick around for a daily dose of Zen with Kelly and Company. Ramya Muthan, Kelly McDonald, we are the hosts of Kelly and Company.
We're checking in with Ryan Delahanty right now. He's our content development specialist over there in Halifax, Nova Scotia. And today, you want to talk about a very important member of the Halifax population who passed away recently, but just want to let everyone know that the season one finale of Tales from the Halifax School for the Blind was released yesterday. So April 6th. Yes. Yep. And we wanted to remember, we're not going to talk about the episode too much in length today, but we wanted to remember Cleon Smith, who recently passed away, as I said, at 78 years old. And he had a lifelong relationship with the school and was featured in the third installment of Tales from the Halifax School for the Blind podcast. So if you want to check that podcast out, do it on your favorite podcast platform. Ryan, can you tell us a little bit about Cleon? We're going to learn, I think, a lot about him today and about what people loved about him and why they knew him.
Absolutely. He was a very beloved figure at the school from when he started as a student at 6 years old. So he was born at the hospital here, just in Dartmouth, outside Halifax. But he grew up in Shag Harbor, Nova Scotia. And at 6 years old, his family, so I think his father at that time was off working in Labrador, and his grandparents, his mom and his sister, drove a couple hours from Shag Harbor to Halifax in his grandfather's 47 Hudson. And he started in 1951 at the school and graduated in 62. Not quite sure where he was going to take his life in the summer that followed, and wound up being offered a job at the school. And so he returned to work in the, eventually wound up working in the senior boys dormitory, supervising students who were not much younger than he was. So that, I think, created a lot of interesting situations. But he stayed involved. And so when the whole educational system changed in the early 80s, he carried on working with the new sort of body that managed education for kids who were blind, partially sighted, deaf, hard of hearing, or had any other special educational needs. So he ended up retiring from his job in 99, but still carried on being involved with their APSE auxiliary charity. He was a member of the CCB, the CNIB, volunteered with Special Olympics Nova Scotia, and took care of a lot of animals, volunteering with the SPCA. Known by everybody as just a very funny, charming, gentle, kind person. A lot of people knew him as well from the bowling league he played in for 30 plus years. And he was also known to play a pretty mean hand of cribbage.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Well, you've brought along a small clip of Cleon introducing himself and sharing some of his favorite activities while at the school.
My name is Cleon Smith. I come from Shag Harbor, Nova Scotia. Well, we played some softball in the wintertime. We made a rink out in the backyard. I used to like to go skating on that rink. Oh, we had musical entertainment. A lot of the students there at that time were very musical. And we had a club at the time there. It was called the Senior Boys Club. And we used to go on outings, go down the valley and around the places like that, to different places. And I enjoyed that very much. That helped me to learn the geography of Nova Scotia.
Wow, we're really getting a picture there. And Ryan, this wasn't the first time, though, that you interviewed Cleon.
That's right. I realized that I'd interviewed him a decade before we recorded this interview for the podcast. Oh, wow. And at that time, we were known as Voice Print, and he was the head of the local Canadian Council of the Blind chapter. And so I had done a short documentary program on everything that was happening as part of White Cane Week 2010. And so he had joined the Halifax chapter of the CCB in 1982, got more and more involved over time, I think was asked to run for president, was first elected president of the chapter in the early 90s, reelected a couple times. And in December 2009, I think they sort of changed the role a little bit to be coordinator of the chapter. And he was then elected for another 2-year term. And so I found it really interesting, though, to revisit this interview, just over 10 years later. And it was just quite intriguing to see what they were advocating for at the time, what they'd identified as the biggest issues. And I brought a clip of that as well.
Okay, well, let's take a listen to a bit of Cleon talking about the biggest issues, or some of the biggest issues, that the CCB was tackling back there in 2010.
Accessibility is a very, very important thing for blind and visually impaired people. Getting around, getting on your bus, knowing where to get off. That's very important. We keep striving to have improvements made in that area. Getting Metro Transit, for instance, to announce stops, various important stops that would help people. We're trying to get that to happen. It probably will take a little bit more work, but I think eventually that will probably happen, and that would be a big improvement for blind and visually impaired people in particular, you know, say, Halifax, for example. Other areas, reading material. It is very important that blind and visually impaired people have access to material, printed material, on either on tape or library services. It's very important that library services be continued, be improved upon it particularly.
Yes, things that we still talk about a decade later. So did Cleon get to see progress made on these issues, Ryan?
Absolutely, he did. So that was really heartening to figure that out. And so, you know, a couple of years after this interview, CELA, the Center for Equitable Library Access, formed in 2014. And in 2016, Metro Transit in Halifax introduced automated stop announcements across the entire bus fleet. Yeah, those absolutely were accomplished. And so didn't get into with the podcast interview kind of what was next on the agenda. But I know that he was, you know, very passionate about education and literacy, especially.
That's really amazing. You mentioned that he supported the APSEA, the APC charity. Is that why you say on the podcast you're also proud to support them?
Absolutely. And so that was something that I'd wanted to set up and was sort of figuring out at the early development stage of the podcast, and really wanted to offer any storyteller just a small honorarium as a token of appreciation for them taking the time and sharing their stories. And of course, the show doesn't work without the stories from the students that were there. And so when offering Cleon the honorarium, he had declined, just, you know, being very happy to participate, not wanting any sort of compensation, even just in a token fashion. But he did want it donated to the APSE, Atlanta Province's Special Education Authority, auxiliary charity. And they provide sensory toys and other supplies for the current generation of kids in Atlantic Canada who are blind, partially sighted, deaf, hard of hearing, or have any other special educational needs. And I've attended a few of their events in the past. Terry Kelly and his Janus band mates had a reunion there. That was a fundraiser. That was a wonderful evening. But speaking to them just as we were getting this rolling, they'd really hit on some hard times fundraising wise during the pandemic. All of their events were, you know, bake sales in person, things like that. So I really thought it was just a perfect fit. And it was very much because of Cleon that we set things up where if I've over budgeted for the guest honorariums or when the guest may decline the honorarium, that we've been able to donate all of that money to the APSE Auxiliary Charity, and being able to have the you know, the older generation of students that went through the older system supporting the current generation of students, I thought was really wonderful, and that's very much because of Cleon.
Mm-hmm. And it seems that, you know, very obvious that education and literacy were clearly very dear to Cleon, and I wanted to know if he checked out the podcast. Was he able to listen to it?
He was one of the only guests that we'd had that does not have a computer or a smartphone to access, you know, any sort of a podcast. And so where he didn't appear until episode 3, I did wait until the first 3 were completed just after Christmas, and somehow dug out a 10-year-old laptop that had a working CD drive and was able to burn the first 3 episodes to CD for Cleon, and then had a nice visit with him, as I said, just around the holiday time at his Dartmouth apartment. So it is, of course, you know, so disappointing that, you know, I was expecting we'd have many conversations with Cleon moving forward. You know, I've heard just even from conversations with our reporter Laura Bain and other people who would go to APSE for a week or two from their homes for specialized training. They all knew Cleon and they all had very different impressions, I'm sure, than the people that were classmates, but they all, I think, loved him equally. And so, you know, really hoping to get more people that knew him to share some stories and maybe see if we can do a little feature on Cleon or a bit of a tribute in a for future episode next season.
Nice. We have about a minute, Ryan. Can you share with us some of the comments that some of the friends, colleagues, and fellow classmates left in the guest book, please?
Absolutely. So one that I thought was really interesting that I'd love to explore more in the podcast was Robert Just from Toronto wrote that he started at the school with Cleon back in 1951. And they really bonded work when he was working as editor of the school newspaper HSP Maritimes in the early 1960s. And Robert had written several columns for the paper at his invitation. Fred and Gloria Haynes, who were in the last few episodes, they loved having him over to play crib for birthday parties, trips to the valley. Fred will dearly miss having Cleon sing to him on his birthday, and Fred being quite musical. So I think that's a big compliment. Nice. And Patsy at the APSE Auxiliary just recognized what a special person he was, that he had volunteered for decades with that charity and did the best he could at all times for the students, was one of their best fundraisers, and always had donations coming in from friends in the community and at all the events participating with a big smile. And so definitely he is missed. And I know that Robert Mercer as well drew on a lot of his conversations with Cleon when he was writing his book, Mrs. Beaton's Question, to really pull up some of those old memories and get a lot of help and guidance. So yeah, it's really lovely to see the outpouring. And, you know, for such a humble person, I don't think he would have appreciated how many people he reached and what a significant impact he really did have on all of them. So wanted to for take sure. this time just to share a little bit more about Cleon.
And we appreciate it, Ryan. Thank you so much, and congrats on the season finale as well. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Ryan Delahunty, our content development specialist in Halifax. We were speaking of Cleon Smith, who passed away at 78 years old. You can find him on the Tales for the Halifax School for the Blind, Episode 3.
We're going to take a brief moment, folks. When we return, Devin Wilkins returns with our guide dog and service animal report. Mary Mammoliti is back to talk food on for our Kitchen Confession Chat. And up next, it's the Wednesday Buzz with Bill Shackleton. Stay tuned.
Initially, it was like, okay, I've lost my personality, my ego. That went on for a couple of years, and then eventually it's like, kick yourself in the backside and say, no more. You know, you have to look into yourself and say, what do you want to do? Go find out somewhere where you can do what you'd really like to do. There is an opportunity there.
Kelly and Company, sharing your stories.
Lots rolled into one show. We call it Kelly and Company. A variety of items. We get on the program, learn a lot, talk a lot, and of course, when we can, we laugh a lot. But basically for you, ladies and gentlemen, we're happy to have you part of the family here of Kelly and Company. Ramya Muthan, she's at her home studio in Toronto. Kelly McDonald at the home studio in London, Ontario. And hanging out at his home, ready to share with us the buzz. We do this on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays on the program, is Bill Shackleton, producer over here at AMI. And we like to start the hour, the second hour of the program, chatting with some of the great stuff Bill finds as he looks for articles from around the world, some interesting topics, and he has quite a variety. We never know where we're going to go. Shackadoodle, welcome back, sir, and took a little look at the email you sent out, giving us a tease of what we're going to discuss. Some great stuff.
Yes, and actually, I'm going to do this first one. It's interesting. Hockey Night in Canada, just to stream NHL games to promote diversity. So essentially, on April 17th, they're going to be streaming in conjunction with Molson Canadian and Sportsnet. They're going to be streaming two games, the Vancouver Canucks against the Leafs and the Edmonton Oilers against the Winnipeg Jets. By the way, this is from CTV News. The hope is that there will be that kids from other countries, there are a lot of people apparently that watch hockey that don't speak English. The hope is that it will promote more diversity, so more coaches can get into the game. Apparently, there are now. I got to be careful and say that there are no coaches of color in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
We need more players because we have kids from other countries who want to play, even if they don't speak English. You know, they know the game, and the hope is that more kids will get involved in hockey if they know that a coach can speak their language is part of the scene, so to speak.
You know, Bill, it's really funny because it is so true in all the sports. We have seen that whether and let's be fair, not intentionally, as the years have gone on, there are definitely a time where certain sports, the segregation was there back in the day. But now we're talking about a lot of different people from around the world that are first or second or, you know, third generation Canadian. Their families have been here, but they don't see themselves represented. And if you don't feel yourself represented, you feel not welcome. But how can anyone relate to you, or where's the resource for me to step in? Would I be taken serious? And, you know, women will say the same. We see around the sports leagues, the professional sports leagues, where are women part of the coaching squads that are out there? And really, we're seeing that if it's not a woman's sport, if it's a male-dominated sport or one of the male leagues in coaching. And advisors in maybe fitness and stuff like that, consultants. So we are seeing some of that. But when you look at people of color, or if you just, you know, we know that hockey mainly used to be dominated by Canadians. My goodness, the Americans felt like that. Like, how am I going to get in there? It's not a sport over here. And we struggle to make it big. So I really love to see this. I'd love to see how this goes over. And how people, as we've seen more attempts by the two networks out there right now, TSN, Sportsnet, and now with CBC/Sportsnet doing this, it really does open it up just as much as having a ladies' night broadcast wanting to push more women into media, sports media, like they did with the Raptors game a couple of weeks ago. Nice.
Well, I'm going to give you the languages. In addition to French and English, it's going to be in Arabic, Cantonese, German, Hindi, Mandarin, and Kayatuk, a South African one. I forgot what that is, but basically it's going to be the unfortunate part is if it's I did reach out to Jeff about this. It's going to be on Sportsnet, and they have several, like Sportsnet East, Sportsnet West, Sportsnet 1, 2, 3, and 4. I don't believe Sportsnet is free, or is it? Or am I wrong there?
I think some of the Sportsnet is, like Sportsnet Now and stuff, or World, I think you have to pay for. And I'm not sure on cable packages because I'm a sports person, so I have them all anyway. But I would imagine a lot of the streaming will go on too, and all the resources that way.
And the other language, sorry, is Tagalog. I believe that's an African, but I'm not really sure.
Wow.
It'll be really interesting to see how, you know, because you've heard baseball in Spanish, how the different commentators are going to handle it. And I mean, even though that you won't be able to, how are they going to translate hockey? Is it going to be fast enough? How are they going to, you know, how's it going to work?
I would absolutely love to hear interviews with the announcers that are doing these. I don't mean of the players, but just their process, because unfortunately there isn't a high demand for a lot of the hockey to be broadcast in these languages. When I say high demand for these people to have work to be able to do it. Nobody's hiring them to do these games in these languages. So I would love to know, for one, adaptations of words they may have had to adapt to be able to call a game, to make sense, because sports are full of slang, really. You really think about references and terminologies and things like that. The things are maybe being used in a different way pertaining to that sport. So I think those interviews would be cool, Bill.
It would be. Good luck with that story. I'm looking forward to that. Now, the next one we have is the next time you buy a box of chocolates, make sure you check the expiration date. Because it could have been made 121 years ago.
Yikes.
I don't know how well it would taste, but anyway, this story is, a box of chocolates, commissioned by Queen Victoria was, found in a helmet case by the eighth Earl, in England, essentially a baronet who brought it home from the Boer War. So apparently, as the story goes, the Roundtree was commissioned by the Queen Victoria to basically design and package a whole bunch of these chocolate tins to boost morale to the British soldiers who fought in the Boer War 121 years ago. So apparently, initially, they were hesitant to do it because they were against the war. But Queen Victoria convinced them to, and this is good, to commission these chocolates. And apparently they commissioned many, many tins. And, you know, one of these tins ended up in a building that was commissioned by the baronet's family. They commissioned a building that donated to the National Trust in Britain. So in that building, somewhere in the attic, they found a helmet case, and they found this box of chocolates. Mm. And apparently, they don't look very good. but they're still identifiable as chocolates.
Okay, you didn't say they're still edible. Got it.
I don't know that they're still edible.
Wow.
They're just trying to make it last, right? Like, they're just trying to make it, because what do you think? They'll put it on display of some sort?
Well, they're eventually going to put it on display. They don't know when. Now, they've wrapped it up in some sort of an acid paper to preserve it. So there are several artifacts from that the baronet brought back, but unfortunately the chocolate isn't one of them yet. But it would be interesting to see what they actually taste like, if they actually taste them at all.
Well, Amuthan, that really takes you going after Easter to get the old chocolate. Boy, that takes it to a new height.
Yeah. I don't know if we should be trying these 121-year-old chocolates, but maybe they can figure out what was in them. I'm curious to know what they look like, though.
Yeah, the shape they're in. Yeah.
Exactly.
They may have been round. Yeah.
Billy would try 120-year-old beer for no problem, right, Bill?
But beer would actually probably taste better.
What's this Bill he's thinking?
I do chocolate too. I would love to see what they tasted like.
I'd be too afraid. I'd be afraid of what might have grown inside the chocolate time.
Yeah, number one, gross.
Oh,
boy.
Shaq, you want to squeeze one more in very quickly?
Yeah, we can do it. Canada's first newspaper was established. In Halifax, it was a two-page tabloid, and it back in the 1800s, and basically before Halifax became a province, and it had it featured dispatches from Europe and England, and they had a little bit of advertising. It was free. It was done out of a printer's shop, and a newspaper publisher in Boston. Actually, his partner donated the printing press and died. Wow. So the partner became the publisher of the newspaper just by accident, by inheriting the building and inheriting the printing press.
Nice.
Wow. Very interesting story. Again, it was free.
Yeah. What year was that, Bill?
Was it 1863 or something like that? It was, something like that.
Wow, that's amazing when you think about that, the printing press, everything like that. And how many of these papers back then must have been just a one person who does all, and I've got to put the paper to bed and just make sure that they get everything in there. I wonder how many recipes they throw in.
Yeah, there were recipes there. They were lawyers, advertising their wares and this sort of thing.
Wow.
So it's now the Royal Gazette, and it's Halifax's paper.
Isn't that something? Thanks, pal.
Thanks a lot.
Bill Shackleton, The Buzz, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, right here on Kelly & Company. We're going to take a break, ladies and gentlemen. Next up, Devin Wilkins brings us our guide dog and service animal report. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the program, Rumya Muth and Kelly McDonald. We are the hosts of Kelly and Company. Remember to check us out using TuneIn Radio, OOTunes, the Radio Player Canada app. Awesome ways in which you can find us out there. And at your, if you're running around, kind of at your leisure, take a listen to the show. Remember, we have the live show at 2 p.m. Eastern, first repeat at 5 midnight and 5 a.m. in the morning Eastern time right here on AMI Audio. Well, Rum, it's time for us to welcome in a monthly segment that, I remember when Devin first brought it to us, just such a great idea to keep people up on what's going on in the service animal and guide dog world. So let's welcome her in to get some latest updates.
I'm Devin Wilkins from Peterborough, Ontario, your self-appointed messenger from the world of guide, hearing, and service dogs. Join me at this time each month as we discuss topics of particular interest to you and your precious pup.
Devin, you put so much into these segments, scouring around, looking for things to utilize to make sure that we're kept up to date. Thank you very much. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. It's been difficult at times, especially during COVID, to find stuff, but it's gradually getting better.
Yeah, we've been saying that with the community reporters, and the yeoman work that everybody's been just plugging away at has been tremendous. Want to talk about International Guide Dog Day first and some special recognition that's happening.
Yeah, we're a few weeks early. International Guide Dog Day isn't until the fourth Wednesday in April, so that'll be April 28th. But we're starting to gear up the recognition of what our dogs do for us. Guide Dog Users of Canada, for example, on their Facebook page, we're going to be featuring stories, special stories that have unfolded between handlers and their dogs. And and we're also going to be talking about the kind of things that can distract guide dogs from what they're going to be doing. For example, we might have a short little almost public service announcements saying something like, if you wouldn't distract a dentist from doing a filling, or a construction worker handling dangerous machinery, or any number of things, then don't distract a guide dog who is guiding a blind person because he or she is working too. Because I think we really need to get members of the general public thinking about what a dog does is not being cute, which they are, and they know it, but that's not their main purpose in life. It's guiding someone who is blind. And, we want the dog to walk straight across the street, not in a diagonal direction, to be patted by somebody who is wiggling their fingers at the dog or, otherwise trying to take their attention, because that could be pretty dangerous.
Seriously, Devin, so, on a regular basis, and I don't have a service animal, I have a pet dog, and even then, when I'm trying to maneuver with using my white cane and Glizzy's on the leash next to me, and people on the streets can be so distracting and, kind of whistling at him or calling him, and I'm just like, wow, imagine if this was a working animal, how
I know
it directly affects people's travels and people's safety and construction zones and all these other things. Like, it's really, it doesn't get old, this message of please stop distracting service animals.
Yeah, because it directly affects the safety and the life of both the dog and the person. Mm-hmm. And so if people see things like that on Facebook, you could help a whole lot by passing them along to your friends and family and acquaintances and that sort of thing.
Absolutely, Devin. Okay, well, that's amazing. Definitely a day to be recognized, and the messaging out there is super important, too. You want to talk about another controversial thing. The Standards for Guide and Service Dogs threatens to rear its ugly head again. What's going on?
Yes, well, about 3 years ago, there was a group of people who thought that standards should be made more stringent and rigid for service animals. Now, I can understand why they wouldn't want snakes to be on planes and that sort of thing. And I can understand why dogs that haven't gone through a public access test of some kind need maybe some kind of standards to follow. But there are two organizations that have been in existence for years that have governed the quality of training schools. And those are the International Guide Dog Federation and Assistance Dogs International. And, you know, every, I don't know, 5-10 years, these schools are re-accredited. They have to reapply for their accreditation. So it's not like things are getting lax, and they say, the association say, okay, here you go, here's your accreditation, you can do whatever you want. It's like the organizations are saying, here's your accreditation for the next 5 years, but we'll be checking up on you to make sure that you do adhere to the standards that we set for you. So they don't need to be schools like the CNI and Guide Dogs for the Blind and any of the schools here in Canada. They don't need to be reaccredited by anybody else. And why should someone who has already graduated from one of these schools go home only to then receive a call from someone saying, I'm coming from whatever standard organization to make sure that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing? They've already been tested. Now, if this group wants to go ahead and say to people who have their dogs privately trained or do the training themselves, okay, now, when you've got your dog trained as well as you think you can do it, then you have to go through a public access test. I for one, can certainly understand that. And the public access test should be similar to the standards that the International Guide Dog Federation and Assistance Dogs International have already set. I can certainly understand that. I tried to engage the leader of that particular group, Joanne Moss, in a debate for a spotlight on assistance dogs, not with me, but with somebody else. And she said, I'm not debating anything with anybody. And I said, okay, well, how about just a gently done, friendly type interview with me? And she said, no. So as far as I'm concerned, we can now only sit back and see what happens. But if we have to fight this one again, I guess that's what we'll have to do. There are two links that I've provided you with, folks, that will give you a lot of the history.
Okay.
If people want to read the articles.
We'll make sure they're on the blog, ami.ca/Kelly Co. Devin, does it feel like as much as people bonded together before to work together, which is something we felt really, really pleased about, because in our community of the low vision blind community, it's a bit rough to get people doing that sometimes.
Yes.
to work together. Do you feel that now that it's happened once, easily to pull people together again? And let's hope so. But you don't want to be fighting these kinds of battles every year. And I know we have to.
Yeah, that's right. I think we'll all pull together. There was already a round of advocacy letters that was sent to a lawyer involved with this organization that's trying to form to adjust the standards. And she got such a response that she said, cut it out or I'll charge you with harassment. So, I mean, she must have gotten hundreds of letters.
Nice. Well, that's what you need. That's what you need. Okay. Well, again, we'll put them ami.ca/KellyCo, folks, for the links. Uber ordered to pay $1.1 million for refusing rides to a San Francisco woman and her guide dog, Bernie. What's the story here?
Yeah. Apparently, she was refused 14 times. And what the cab drivers or the Uber drivers would do is take her part of the way to where she wanted to go and let her out, tell her to get out. She was there and just leave her stranded. And there were other times that they harangued her all the way to where she needed to go because she had to bring the guide dog with her. And she was late on several occasions to her work because Uber wasn't cooperating. And she was eventually fired from her job.
Yep. So it cost her money. It's dangerous. And you know what? A court has to make an example because you put a person in danger saying, yeah, you're here. You don't want to take the person. Tell them I'm not taking you and face the consequences from your work. Obviously, Uber is not getting through to these drivers or the drivers are lying and saying, oh, yeah, no problem. I'll take a guide dog or whatever the problem is. Enough talk. Start hurting the pocketbook.
I know it's been going on for years and the courts have to bring the hammer down.
Yeah, I was going to say these people aren't idiots, but obviously they are.
Yeah.
Wow.
Their idiot tendencies come through their camouflage of cleverness.
Devin, really quickly, we do have some time for this. Introductions of new guide dog teams seem to be picking up. Can you tell us what you've noticed?
In the past couple of weeks, people like our own Becky Zare have been writing in to say that they've just graduated with their new dogs, and I can think of at least two others. So stuff is happening, people. I know it can be pretty discouraging, especially when new lockdowns are being held over our heads for later today or whatever, but things have been happening, and they will continue to happen as time and circumstance permit. So I just thought we might want to end on that piece of good news.
Very, very nice piece of good news. Thank you very much, Devin, and always, of course, wonderful having you on the program with such great stuff to talk about. Again, ami.ca/KellyCo. We'll talk to you next month.
Okay. Have a good one, folks.
Devin joins us once a month here on the program. Always wonderful to hear from her as we have our guide dog and service animal report. She is here always on the first Wednesday of the month. Coming up in just a moment, Mary Mammoliti of Kitchen Confession dishes out different kitchen secrets to make you rethink how you cook. We'll talk to her in a moment. For Videotron subscribers out there, look for us on channel 173. That's where you can find AMI audio from your TV. And Bell Alliance customers, channel 66 in Atlantic Canada. Visit AMI.ca/schedules for a list of channel locations in your area. I'm Kelly McDonald in London, Ontario, at the home studio here. Ramya Muthan at the home studio in Toronto.
Let's get to some food talk as we do every other week on Wednesdays with Mary Mammoliti.
Looking for quick and easy healthy recipes? Need that nudge to get back into the kitchen? Or simply looking for food inspiration? Join me, Mary Mammoliti, on Kelly & Company, where I will share recipes and cooking tips. Your new day of endless possibilities awaits.
Today, we are talking about, I feel like there's a little bit of something for everybody today, Mary, because we're talking about different kitchen secrets to make you think how you cook in the kitchen, a bit of hacks, a bit of secrets. But before that, I just wanted to point out that it's been a very busy day for you today, huh?
It has been a packed day.
Yeah, it started like super early in the morning, somewhere between 9 and 11 a.m. Eastern time.
Yes, on... Yeah, Now with Dave Brown.
Oh, yes. It was on Now with Dave Brown.
It was, yes. We were talking all things Kitchen Confession Podcast.
Quick plug for you. And we're going to get to know more about what the latest episode of Kitchen Confession, as well as Bits and Bytes, has to offer. So shall we go jump right into it? What are some of the things that we can do in the kitchen to... help us with two things, save time and save money. You have a few things you want to go over.
Okay, I do. And there's a lot to go over, so hopefully I can pack it all in. I want to talk about extending veggie freshness because there are so many different ways, but this is one of the simplest ways. Line the bottom of your refrigerator's crisper drawer with paper towel. The reason why is because that'll absorb any excess moisture, because the excess moisture is what causes the veggies to rot.
Okay.
So it's just a simple paper towel right at the bottom of your crisper drawer. Next, this one is life-changing. Am I hyping it up too much? No.
Well, why, man? Like you say, it makes a big deal, especially if someone's on the borderline of veggies or something like that. And you say, no, put some paper towel. They'll be more crispy. Oh, that's and good. If that's the game changer, that could be someone's health, Mayor. So no,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Overstate
See,
it.
I'm
Go
not
ahead.
Hyping it up too much. But then there's, wait, listen to this one. You don't want to waste your lemons.
Right.
You know, cutting them in half, you can dry them out. This one here blew my mind. And I said that I pronounced every single syllable. Because if you take a metal skewer and you puncture the fruit right through the middle.
Okay.
Then you squeeze it and you can squeeze out exactly how much you want. And then you can save the rest for later.
So good.
Right?
Especially if you roll out the lemon or lime beforehand, so all the juice is in there running already. Oh, nice.
Yep, it releases from those pieces, and it's just so good. And then, you know, you can just store that. It doesn't dry out, and it's ready for your next use.
Okay.
This just keeps on getting better by the minute. Now we're going to fresh herbs, how to keep them fresh. Now, there's so many different ways, but this one, I love it, is because all you do is you take your fresh herbs, wash them, give them a good dry, like just pat them down with some paper towel, put them in a plastic bag, a resealable plastic bag, and then pop them into the freezer. This way, when you need them, it's easier to chop, but you don't even need any knife with these.
Right.
Because you could just take them out of the freezer, mash it up, squeeze the bag up.
You break them.
And you've already chopped it up. And then once they hit the pan, they defrost in a second.
Wow, that's amazing. Good. And Mary stands there outside the freezer, me have strength, and breaks them all. Right?
I love it. I love it. Get my frustration out.
Mayor, I like your next one because I like the way this you've put this down for us to kind of as some of the in your notes here. Make mushrooms slime-free.
Slime-free.
That's a great description
like
of
that
it.
One, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because it's happened to all of us, and it happens. But to prevent that, again, get that paper towel and just wrap your mushrooms around in paper towel. That will help it and prevent it from going slimy.
I mean, so again, what I'm hearing is...
Yes. It'll prevent them from going slimy, but if you keep them in your refrigerator for a couple of weeks, I can't help you there.
Okay, yeah, well...
Well, that's because they grow into something else. But...
Ew.
And it's a little more than just leaving the paper towel in the bottom when it comes to that one, Rum. To get
no,
slime.
It is. And I was going to say, what I'm hearing is don't just, you know, open up your produce in whatever container it comes with, use some of it, and then leave it in there for the rest of God knows how much time until you have to throw them out because they're too slimy now.
Right. A lot of people do that. A lot of people do. What I'm suggesting is... Get a bowl, line it with some paper towel, put your mushrooms in there, top it with some paper towel, back in the refrigerator.
Okay. Okay, I like it. All right, what else?
Okay, next. Keep your honey clear. So, you know when your honey crystallizes or becomes mm-hmm. a little cloudier, it's harder to scoop out?
Yep.
Microwave it on medium heat in 30-second increments. Say that three times fast.
Wow.
And it makes the honey clear again. So, restores it back to its original state.
And if you do it on high or something, if it's set, that makes things bubble and it can be
and liquefy
real messy.
And, yeah, and pour over, and then it's a whole different ball game.
Yep.
But if we do it in 30-second increments, we're okay.
So that's the thing, folks. Don't forget medium, because then you'll be cussing Mary out and saying she gave you bad advice on the show.
Exactly. I'm going to get all this hate mail. I never do. You guys are awesome.
No. Never.
Never, ever. Next. This one, I know many people have heard this, but I'd like to share this again over and over because it's so important. It's so difficult to tell mm-hmm. how fresh your eggs are.
Right.
So you want to make sure you have fresh eggs. You're uncertain. Get a glass and then just pop them into the glass gently. Fill it with water. And if it floats, the bad ones will float. The fresh ones will sink to the bottom. Okay. And that's how you can tell.
Yeah, the reminder's good because sometimes you mix it up.
You do, for sure. The glass half full, the glass half empty.
Right now.
The floating
eggs have been floating. I'm good.
That's right.
Oh, wait a minute.
6 weeks to spring left or what? Floating egg?
Floating egg.
This next one's a good trick too. It's like the egg one where you kind of hear about it. Maybe you don't utilize it enough.
I know a lot of people don't utilize this step enough. So protect brown sugar from hardening. Keep the brown sugar in your freezer. It'll actually stop it from hardening. So that's a step that many people don't use. Or
and it almost sounds reverse what you would do, right?
Right, you're
putting,
exactly.
Like we put everything else in the freezer to freeze up. Here, no, put your sugar in there. It'll keep it from getting hard.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But if your sugar's already past that state and it's hardened, this is where you could soften it by sealing it in a bag with like a slice of fresh bread or even an apple. Or again, our handy microwave on high for 30 seconds. Don't go more than that because then we have another, again, totally different situation.
On medium.
On medium. Oh, you can do it on high.
Okay. This one you can. Okay. Yeah. Uh-oh.
Yeah. Okay. We hear high and everyone's just, oh, I don't think so.
Take notes, Kels.
Yeah. I'm not going to mess around like that. Just stick to medium on all these devices. Okay. Mayor, help us rethink how we cook. We were talking about this as one of the things you were bringing on today. What tips do you have in store for us on that?
Okay. You know, those hot, humid days and you've got your salt shaker out, you're having a barbecue and the salt hardens. So how to avoid that from happening? Put some rice in your salt shaker. It actually stops the salt from hardening. The rice absorbs all that condensation and it avoids that causing up, or it doesn't clump up. So that's a good one. Keep rice in your salt shaker, especially if you're taking it out. And by the looks of it, sounds like we're all going to be spending a lot of time in our backyards or our neighbor's backyard. No, not even that. Never mind. I take that back, guys.
If you have a backyard, you'll spend a lot of time in it.
Right. Right. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Over salted your soup or stew. This has happened to all of us, and there's nothing more frustrating than that, than oversalting a soup or a stew. Try adding wedges of either of raw potato or apple. It absorbs the salt. So all you want to do is just add it in, simmer it for 10 minutes or so, and then remove the wedges. If your soup is still too salty, you can do a couple of things. You can sprinkle in a little spoonful of sugar, which I haven't done because I use this other option. But you can do that. It's available. You know, it'll help. Or you can use a dash of apple cider vinegar. That may actually do the trick. It's worked for me in the past, so that does help. Or you can also just dilute it with a bit of water or key low-sodium broth, because if not, you're adding that sodium back in if you get the regular.
Yeah. So South Indian cuisine, we do have a rule of thumb, especially when I first started making curries and stuff. My mom was like, always have some kind of milk on hand, coconut milk or regular milk or cream if you're really desperate, but something on hand to toss in at the end because of all the flavor. Like, it's a very intense flavor palette, right?
Yes.
So to kind of utilize it or mild it out a bit, you're going to want to toss in some of that stuff. But I don't think it works for oversalting.
Can't use the evaporated soap?
Milk? No. You mean the condensed milk?
Condensed,
no.
Yeah.
No, I think what you're talking about, it works beautifully. Coconut milk works beautifully for that. For actually, it just tones down the flavors and makes it more unison. So when you kind of take it in, it goes evenly on your palate, which works beautifully as well. But I haven't tried that for over-salting, to be honest.
I haven't. It doesn't work. So that's what I'm trying to tell you. When you said it's happened to everybody, I was like, yeah, the other day when I added too much salt. So try some of this stuff that Mary's suggesting.
Don't put the milk.
And I just think if Rumya added too much, it must have been really salty. Like, have been like, you know, that stuff you could put to preserve. Let's keep this meat over the winter.
Do you love salting your food?
I love salt. Everything salt. Salt and sugar.
Kelly, what about you?
No, I used to. I mean, I like it, but I don't. I'm very careful. I use garlic instead of salt. So people may, and that helps keep people 6 feet away. Yeah. But it's that, you know, knowing I can't, because I do. I used to be ridiculous. My mother used to, like, your fries are white caps. And she'd get mad because, what are you doing salting it before you taste it? I know it's going to need it, Mom. It's
exactly.
So that's I cut that out years ago because I kept hearing my mother's head, no matter where I was, I kept hearing her in my head running off at me. So, but I do enjoy it. But garlic is a very nice substitute, Mayor.
It is. Yeah. I love that. And for me, high blood pressure just told me you can't have salt.
Yeah. I was just going to say. Yeah.
I always undersalt. Do I have time for a couple more?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Ice cubes from coffee. Have you guys ever tried this? It is so good, especially in the summer. You pour freshly brewed coffee into your ice cube trays. But you want to keep it a little cool. You don't want to pour really hot coffee in there.
No.
Just cool it down, pour it into your ice cube trays, pop it into the freezer, freeze it up. And then when you want to have like a cold iced latte, pour some milk in a glass, pop some of those ice cubes in. It is so good. It melts into the milk. It gets nice and cold. But I'm going to take it a step further. If you like it a little sweetened, before you freeze it, add some sugar or whatever sweetener you want to your coffee and then freeze it. So this way, when it melts in your milk, it's already pre-sweetened for you.
Mm-hmm. That sounds great.
Fix burnt milk.
Next hack.
Yeah. Fix burnt milk, definitely. So if you burn milk while heating it on the stove, add a pinch of salt. That'll temper that scorched smell and that taste.
Mm.
And then there's corn. Okay. You want to cut it. You like corn on the cob. You don't want to eat it on the cob. You want to cut off all the kernels. So stabilize it. Get yourself a bundt pan. And then put that corn on the cob smack in the center of the hole of that bundt pan. That'll stabilize it. And then take your knife and just cut along all the sides. And then the actual bundt pan will catch everything. So it doesn't go everywhere on your counter.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Then you can have that with her salt pork.
Yep.
Let's do one more before we move to recipe. Can we do the ripening fruit? Because I thought this one was pretty cool.
Yes, ripen fruit quickly. So to ripen fruit, you want to do this overnight. Place the fruit in a paper bag, add an apple. Apples release ethylene gas, and that actually increases and speeds up the maturing process of other fruits.
Mm.
So give it a try. Overnight, put your apple in there with whatever fruit you want to ripen, and we'll see what happens in the morning.
That's nice. That's good. Oh, that's cool. Mayor, do you have a recipe for us?
I do. Make yourself some mini desserts. So get a couple of wine mouth glasses or even mason jars, enough for one serving. And then what I want you to do is just take the mouth of that glass, get a store-bought pound cake, slice it up, and then use your glass to cut rounds and cut a few of them. Because what we're going to do is we're going to layer it in the glass. So start with a layer of the pound cake. It wasn't coming to me. Layer the pound cake, top it with whipped cream, macerated berries. So what you can do for this, get overripe berries, mix it with sugar, and then toss a little bit of your favorite liqueur in there. Mix it up and let it sit for 30 minutes. While that's sitting, whip up some fresh whipped cream because it tastes so good. So you're going to need 3 cups of heavy cream, 2 teaspoons vanilla extract, 1/4 cup confectioner's sugar. Add the whipped cream to the bowl of a stand mixer, or if you want a hand mixer. and just whip that up until you get soft peaks. Add the vanilla, the confectioner's sugar. That's it. So just start layering in your glass and then just dig in. It'll last in your refrigerator for up to 2 days, covered with some plastic wrap.
Oh, it doesn't need to.
Mine wouldn't last in the fridge. Yeah, it would be gone the minute I assemble it.
Exactly. Even if it needed to chill, it wouldn't. Mary, before we go, tell us the latest on Kitchen Confession, that podcast, as well as Bits and Pipes.
All right. Kitchen Confession podcast. Publishing today, we chat with Isabella DePaz. She's the owner and the chief baker at the Cake Mama. And she talks about creating delicious vegan baked goods and some of her savory dishes as well. Plus, she wants to let us know, and we talk about if beer and wine, are they truly vegan? So she breaks that down for us. And we just get into that because she converted her business a few years back and turned her entire bakery to a vegan bakery. And she wanted to maintain it. It took her months to maintain that integrity of her pastries to get that light and fluffy, airy. She talks about making an aquafaba pavlova, which is very interesting because usually it's made with white egg.
Oh, interesting. Mary, this is going to be fascinating. Kitchen Confession podcast is out now. People can go and enjoy it on their favorite podcast platform. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Thank you.
Mary Mammoliti of kitchenconfession.com.
We'll take a break, ladies and gentlemen. And when we return, we'll wrap up the show and see what's coming up on Now with Dave Brown. Ramya Muth and Kelly McNaught, we're the hosts of Kelly & Company. Thanks for being with us, ladies and gentlemen. Ram, remember a few weeks ago we were talking about some stuff going on at HumanWare and problems they were having. Robert just let us know about website issues and that. We have something else here just to draw some attention to for some of the people that might be out there scratching their heads. This is a note from our marketing department. Do you listen to AMI Audio podcasts through any of the Victor Reader products that HumanWare has? If so, due to a recent upgrade, AMI Audio Podcast may no longer update on your device. To solve the issue, please unsubscribe and resubscribe to your favorite podcast and restart your device. Thank you and enjoy listening to AMI Podcasts. Appreciate your time. Kelly McDonald, or Kelly & Company, of course, being, you know, the one you just resubscribe to right off the bat, and the one that right now we want to mention a few things about today's show. Rum segments that you want to kind of just give a little salute to that people should go back and check out via the podcast once they've unsubscribed and resubscribed if they have a Victor Reader stream.
Well, we just finished talking to Mary Mammoliti of Kitchen Confession, so of course also subscribe to her podcasts plural. But she talked about some
today.
She talked about some really great kitchen hacks. Honestly, some of the stuff that she was going down the list, I was like, oh my God, you got to remember these and take notes and just have refreshers once in a while because they are time savers. They save some of your cooking and money savers, really, because like veggies lasting longer in your fridge and herbs that you can pull out whenever, those are great things to remember.
That's really great. Yeah, really, really tremendous stuff. We also had a really good TV talk with Greg David going over some of the things and just kind of looking at the landscape since the pandemic too, that has forced television to adjust and some of the shows. And we've got some really nice things in his spring mixed bag as he cleaned out, giving us a lot. You can find all that via the Kelly & Company podcast. We'd appreciate it if you subscribed using your favorite podcatcher. You can also do that to Now with Dave Brown and Voices of the Walrus, other programs available here from AMI Audio. Paul Daniel, one of the producers of Now with Dave Brown, he joins us to tell us what's coming up on the Thursday edition. Good day, Paul. What's on the agenda?
Hey, Kelly. Hey, Ramya. On tomorrow's show, we'll speak with Jason Fraser, CEO of Mind's Eye, an organization that offers description for the blind and low vision community. But both Dave and Jason have something in common. They're both wrestling fans. I can't believe I said that. They'll be taking all things. They'll be talking all things WrestleMania, which is taking place this weekend over two nights. We'll talk to Valiant Campbell, author of the Amazing Zoe series of children's books, and how she makes it a point to include stories of African history, black royalty, and superheroes in her works. Sean Priest of Double Tap Canada will talk about the latest upgrades in smart home display, including face tracking features, and discusses if this is a sign of progress or just simply creepy.
What a way to finish it, Paul. That's great. Well, we'll all tune in to find out.
All right, you're all going to remember that.
Creepy, yay or nay. Yeah. Thanks, Paul.
Take care.
Paul Daniel, one of the producers from Now at Dave Brown. Their team gets things going for you. 9 a.m. in the morning Eastern Time right here on AMI. And, of course, available via podcast like our show and so many of the others are right here on the network. Rum, our Wednesday edition, middle of the week, comes to an end and a full show again. And looking at tomorrow, same thing.
Exactly, Kels. And tomorrow we have roundtable conversations, which is always a nice bag of stuff to talk about.
Jenny Bovart with us, too. Also another podcaster with the network. Boy, they're coming out of everywhere, all the podcasters. Mary on Now this morning and Jenny with us tomorrow. So look forward to it, ladies and gentlemen. And we'll talk to you, Rum, at 2.
Sounds good.
Also, Halton Healthcare is piloting Blind Square to create a more accessible experience that will ensure individuals with sight loss, and it'll ensure it that they will have the opportunity to navigate the hospital safely and independently. We speak with Jack McCormick as he returns to the program. He is organizational development consultant of Halton Healthcare, and he'll be on the show with us tomorrow. Community reporter Nick D'Ambrosio, he details something very interesting going on that we've talked about on the show, a study on echolocation, seeking blind, deafblind, and low-vision individuals to participate. We flip through quirky stories from around the world with Jeff Ryman on What in the World, also on the show. Three feature-length adventures involving murder and intrigue have been dramatized by BBC Radio, and Audible has released them as a collection in one audiobook. Michael Fair will offer his impressions. Fern Lullum is going to highlight Sightsavers tomorrow, international organization, and their job is to make sure that they work to cure and prevent blindness in developing nations. And as mentioned, Jenny Bovart joins us, host of the Low Vision Moments podcast. We'll start tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern. Talk to you then. Have a good night. Some of the best conversations that I've had with people who have low vision or blind are about our mistakes. You know, when you wander in somewhere where you know, uh-oh, not supposed to be here. Now, yes, folks, they can end up in real bad ways. You end up thinking you're somewhere you're not, or missing a bus stop because they have it on reroute and you still think you're on the normal route. For those who don't have the stop calling, that can really be a problem. And some of the funniest things are when you stop and you're talking to somebody. I remember I was with a buddy one day and I was guiding him, and this was years ago, and a fella stopped to talk to us. And he was, oh, hi, man, how are you? My buddy says, oh, I'm fine. And he says, you know, where are you guys going? He said, oh, I think we're going to stop and get some ice cream down the way. I don't know. Who is this? And the guy says, oh, it's Michael. And my buddy says, Michael? He says, yeah. Michael who? Says my buddy. And of course, I didn't know the fella, so I couldn't help him out. Well, the fella turns to him and says, Michael, your brother. And again, it goes down to that not in a place where he expected to see his brother. And then we talk about the different places we end up. Yes, there's the proverbial, good, found the bathroom, here I go. Oh, I'm sorry, ladies. You know, those are the terrible things that embarrass the heck out of you and happen. Do we sit around and, oh, woe is me? No. No, the laughter's too much. And I was raised in that world that you laugh at your mistakes. And my goodness, telling some of the stories, and I'll tell more of them on here, I'm sure of it. It's a lot of the fun to learn how to be able to laugh at yourself. And I look at some people and I think that's one of the blessings of being vision impaired. I know there's enough of that stuff going on. I know not to take myself too serious. You're going to make those mistakes. Doing this show, I've learned a lot about doing that, because every day making mistakes with what I read or something that I don't really know a lot about, and I get out here and run my mouth. And I think that's a benefit, especially on really understanding who we are and keeping ourselves centered. So for me, that conversation with people, yeah, sure, it brings it home. You don't feel like you're the only one making some of these mistakes, but mostly you learn how to laugh at it. Best medicine in the world, especially at a time like now.
You've been listening to the complete Kelly and Company podcast experience.
The Real Deal airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform.